be ready always to give a reason, an apologia, a reason for the hope that is within you, yet with gentleness and reverence.
Craig Parton, speaking at this year's Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
There is the apologetical task in a nutshell. Not with arrogance or beating people up or, I gotcha, I got a snazzy answer to every question. But in humility, God has allowed us to stand on the shoulders of giants in apologetics. It grieves me that we are so generally ignorant about apologetics and the heritage we have been given as Christians.
You can listen to Craig Parton's presentation, Making the Case for the Historical Jesus, on an audio DVD from the Making the Case Conference. We'll send it to you for a donation of $300. For more information, look for the DVD logo at issuesetc.org. Luther did the same thing. He just went down to the tavern, heard some half-drunk men singing a song, thought that would make a good hymn, went back and took these bar tunes and put them in the church.
My response is, where are they getting this information from? Because it's completely wrong.
We're not going to put a pall on somebody who hasn't been baptized, or someone who had been baptized and rejected it.
That which was begun in my baptism is fed and nourished at the Lord's table, and without that, there's not much there in me to sustain through trouble or trial or handle what life brings.
Former evangelicals on track to be Lutheran pastors by attending Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Love, Issues, Etc.
Now this was a couple days ago, earlier this week, and I was driving into the airport one evening, sun going down, and as I was going toward the airport in St. Louis, right there on the north side of St. Louis, coming the opposite direction on the highway is about a quarter mile, if not more, of SWAT vehicles, police vehicles, all with their lights going, all in a formation, more or less taking over the highway on the way to a story that has not only become a big local story for the Midwest, but a national story, the aftermath of a shooting of an 18-year-old black man in Ferguson, Missouri, in North St. Louis. And of course, nightly, we are treated to the kind of coverage that goes wall to wall, that it consists mostly of a camera trained upon a group of police officers, SWAT teams, and lots of tear gas. And occasionally we get to see a burning building, looting, almost in some cases rioting. There are a lot of angles to a story like this, a lot, that the media needs to cover. Is there a religion angle, and how has that been covered? Welcome back to Issues Etc. on this Thursday afternoon, the 14th of August. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to talk about media coverage of the faith angle in this story of the aftermath of the shooting of an 18-year-old black man in Ferguson, Missouri. Also a story from the San Francisco Chronicle that shouldn't surprise anyone, but apparently surprised, at least mildly surprised, the San Francisco Chronicle, that two Catholic universities are limiting employee abortion coverage. How do they cover that story? Bobby Rush Jr. of GetReligion.org will be our guest. And a little bit later, we'll continue our series with Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer on Christ in the Old Testament. We'll be talking about Isaiah chapter 56. You can join us for the next hour, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Send us an email, talkback at issuesetc.org, or tweet at issuesetc. Bobby Rush Jr. is an Oklahoma City-based religion writer with 20 years of experience for secular and religious publications, from the Associated Press to the Christian Chronicle, and he's a contributor to GetReligion.org. Bobby, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks for having me.
Most people are not looking for a religion angle because there are so many angles on this news story about the rioting that follows the shooting of an 18-year-old black man in Ferguson, Missouri, by a police officer. What is the religion angle here? What do you make of how it's being played in the press?
Well, I think the religion angle is still developing, and I think you're exactly right about the fact that this story has so many more important elements at this point, and maybe things that have people focus on other elements, that the religion angle really hasn't come into play. You know, and last night there were some developments with some pretty high profile journalists being arrested in a McDonald's, basically for doing their jobs. So, you know, to this point, most of the coverage I've seen has actually been local coverage, and Lily Fowler is the religion writer for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, and she has been all over the story all week.
So where does the religion angle come in? How has it entered the story?
Well, you know, the story that Lily has today, which was a pretty good story, is about volunteers coming together, you know, trying to make a difference in the community. And she points out that the majority of those people are coming from faith communities, and their faith in their religious beliefs are coming into play as far as their motivation for wanting to do something. You know, the protests, the tear gas, you know, even the journalist arrest seem to be making most of the headlines. But, you know, kind of off to the side, you know, not getting as much attention are these people coming and, you know, trying to picking up rubber bullets, broken glass, liquor bottles, tear gas grenades, just, you know, kind of, you know, as part of their faith, they're coming, they're doing this, and not really, you know, there are maybe not as many TV cameras or attention focused on them doing something nice and kind of showing the true heart of some of the people in that community, as opposed to the images that are more dramatic and obviously deserve to be on TV, but, you know, maybe there's a positive side of the story that's being neglected a little bit at this point.
Do you have any kind of minor, albeit kind of gentle, criticism for the religion coverage of the story that you've seen so far from Fowler?
Well, you know, the post I did for Get Religion about Lily's story today, I kind of, you know, we're a media criticism website, so, you know, kind of like a movie critic, you never really go to the movie and say, hey, that's a perfect film. So in this case, you know, she mentioned one of the volunteers talking about, you know, putting, I guess, a sign in his truck windshield, and she said that recites a line from the New Testament, and then she quoted it that says, "Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing." And then the volunteer she interviewed said, "We can't take justice into our own hands." And to me, a line from the New Testament describing it that way just doesn't do justice to what people of faith and Christians will recognize as some of Jesus' last words on the cross. So my minor criticism was I wish that the Post-Dispatch had been more specific. And I feel like, you know, that quote, "Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing," explaining a better context and why Jesus said that and where he said it would even give more meaning to what the person she interviewed said about not taking justice into his own hands.
And it's almost an unintended double entendre, because for the those who are familiar with the context, the scriptural context of that quotation, that is a highly evocative moment. That's the moment of Christ's crucifixion, literally.
Right.
While he's being
right.
crucified, these are the words that he is saying. For those who don't know the context, it just sounds like kind of a nice saying that Jesus might have said someplace.
Yeah, just a line from the New Testament. It's just, to me, it's just overly vague. But, you know, I hate to, you know, you're dealing with a reporter who's been, you know, on a all-consuming kind of story all week, and this is just one, you know, one line and one story of many that she's been involved in. So I hate to, you know, I don't want to be overly critical, but, you know, it was something I felt like, you know, did deserve a mention.
Okay. There's also, of course, along with news coverage, there's the parallel universe of social media, and in particular, one that reporters are very fond of, and that is Twitter. You've been kind of watching some of that traffic there surrounding this story. What have you discovered?
Well, I just noticed that last night there were kind of some, I don't know, I called them religious overtones. I'm not sure if that's the exact way you would describe it, but, you know, others might say there's people taking the Lord's name in vain on Twitter. But, you know, like the media writer for the Poynter Institute had used the terminology "Jesus, comma, this from," you know, and then he quoted Wesley Lowery, the Washington Post writer who was one of the journalists arrested, kind of just describing just a pretty unbelievable scene as far as his treatment by his claim of how the police treated him pretty badly at the McDonald's and took him into custody yesterday just doing his job. And then there was another tweet from a national writer for the Los Angeles Times who mentioned that he had called the Ferguson police chief and basically told the police chief what he knew about what had happened to these journalists, and he quoted the police chief's response as, "Oh, God." You know, and then the other tweet that I mentioned in my post was a media ethics, pretty well-known media ethics person from Poynter who just asked, "What the hell is happening in Ferguson, Missouri?" And, you know, Terry Mattingly, who's the editor of Get Religion, assured me that we can use the word hell in a headline in these circumstances, so I think I'm okay with using that word just this once, although I'm a little afraid about my mother seeing it in print.
What are your thoughts here about, and I'm asking you as a reporter, really, uh-huh. in this case, just to kind of put the pause button on the religion angle, per se, but as a reporter, several reporters arrested in the course of this, and they, at least one of them is claiming, as you said before, that they were simply doing their job trying to cover this story at a national level. What are your thoughts there as a reporter?
The reports I'm seeing, and maybe they're one-sided, are just unbelievable. I mean, it's reports of you know, just journalists sitting in a McDonald's trying to charge their phones and trying to write their stories and do their jobs, and police coming in and basically bullying them. You know, one reporter's, you know, his, I don't remember which one, talked about, you know, the police taking him into custody and then purposely banging his head on a glass door on the way out and saying, oops, I didn't mean to do that. It doesn't sound like the United States of America. It's just unbelievable. You know, like I say, I'm not there and I don't know both sides of the story, but, you know, then there are other reports about, you know, the police being real, you know, telling media to put their cameras down and basically trying to control what's reported and control the images that are out there. It's insane to me. I mean, it's just hard to believe.
Real quickly, do you have thoughts on kind of the reporter's responsibility to be on the scene as close to the scene as possible, reporting firsthand what's going on, versus reporters being on the scene as close as they can be, and from the police perspective, interfering with what the police are going to have to do to keep control of, you know, essentially potential riots that have now stretched into their fifth day?
Right. You know, obviously there's a balance there. I'm a journalist, so my bias is going to be on the side of the freedom of the press, and the press has a job to do, and you know, as long as they're not getting in the way of the police or conflicting with what they're doing, to me, they need to be left alone to do their jobs. I mean, especially if you're sitting in a McDonald's just charging your cell phone and suddenly you're arrested for no reason and the police won't give you the officer's name or give you a report of the charges against you. It's just... It doesn't make any sense to me, and you know, and from a PR standpoint, you know, regardless of what you know, you've had the thing that started all this was an unarmed young black man who shot to death by police. You know, at that point, to me, you know, you've got two very distinct sides of the story. But if you're the police department at that point, I just don't understand. From a public relations standpoint, making things worse by the way that they've handled their media relations since that point. It just, you know, like I said, I don't know the whole story, but it doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
Another story that you have been watching is from the San Francisco Chronicle. As I said earlier, a story about two Catholic universities that have stunned everyone by doing something completely unexpected, which is limiting employees' abortion coverage. Why does the press continue to be surprised that Roman Catholic institutions are acting according to Roman Catholic principles?
That's a good question. I mean, to be fair, in this case, it's two Catholic universities that in the past have paid for abortion, which, you know, to me, a question is, why were you doing that in the past? But as far as why that is, why a Catholic university wanting to uphold Catholic doctrine would be so surprising, I don't have the answer.
How does the San Francisco Chronicle cover the story?
Well, the story they ran was, you know, pretty one-sided, pretty tilted toward the idea that abortion rights are a great thing, and these two universities are setting our state back by not wanting to provide coverage for all their employees for elective abortions. And you know, the story does quote some people on both sides, but it's one of these stories where you'll have a small little quote from somebody on the Catholic side who supports not covering the abortions, then you'll have about three times that much ink given to the side that's critical and concerned about what's going on. So it's just a story that's tilted very heavily on the abortion rights side with the anti-abortion side, in my view, not getting a fair opportunity to give their side of the story.
Does it seek to answer that question that you just mentioned, which is why the change in policy, or to accurately report that this is, at least accurately report that this is simply this Catholic university bringing itself into line, or universities bringing themselves into line with what is the position of the Catholic Church?
Yeah, this particular story, you know, basically boiled it down to leaders of both universities said they were driven by religious principles, but it never gets into the, well, where were those principles before and what's changing? And, you know, there have been some other stories that have kind of, I think, done some more intelligent reporting on some of the I guess competing sides, and one side feeling like the universities have drifted from their Catholic heritage and this is a way to bring them back, and no, this story doesn't really get into any of those intricacies.
With only about a minute here, talk about that, the issue that coverage then raises for you as a reporter, which is, I think you would say, balance, and kind of a literal balance of the quantity of quotes, words, arguments, whatever it may be. That might be difficult to arrive at if you've got someone who makes their point in one sentence, makes a good point in one sentence. How does a reporter deal with trying to strike that balance of the two opposing viewpoints?
Right. Yeah, I think that the idea that to be fair and to be balanced, each side has to get the same amount of space. I don't think that's the case. But I think in cases where you read a story and after you're done reading it, you say, you know, this seems weighted the other side, that is one way to go back and say, well, let me go and just count the number of words and see, is my mind playing tricks on me or is this really unbalanced? And that's kind of what I did in this situation and kind of come up, yeah, what I thought I read as far as the unbalance is, you know, the word counts kind of back that up.
Bobby Rush Jr. is an Oklahoma City-based religion writer with 20 years of experience for secular and religious publications from the Associated Press to the Christian Chronicle, and he's a contributor to GetReligion.org. Bobby, thanks for being our guest.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
When we come back, we're going to talk Christ in the Old Testament, our weekly series with Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer. We'll be in Isaiah chapter 56, but in order to get there, we have to start in Isaiah chapter 55. We'll find out why right after this.
Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, email, Google+. Simple ways that you can share Issues Etc. programs with your friends, relatives, and fellow parishioners. Just go to Listen on Demand Archives at issuesetc.org and look for the share feature images posted beneath each audio segment. You're only one click away from telling someone about Issues Etc. The Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org and look for Share This.
Bethany Lutheran College is pleased to sponsor Issues Etc. and Lutheran Public Radio. Bethany Lutheran College is located in the picturesque river town of Mankato, Minnesota, and is committed to making Christian higher education affordable for all with generous financial aid packages available. At Bethany, you'll find stimulating academic programs, a friendly atmosphere, and opportunities to grow both in intellect and in your faith, all within the framework of a supportive Christian environment. For more information, visit us on the web at blc.edu.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.
In Hosea 4, we read, "My people are destroyed by lack of knowledge." At the CLCC, we educate Lutherans on being Lutheran. The Confessional Lutherans for Christ's Commission treasure our Lutheran beliefs and think that all Christians would if they learned what we believe, teach, and confess. Visit our website at theclcc.org. See what we have to offer. Get on our mailing list, or better yet, join us and encourage your pastors to hold an event in your area. For more information, go to theclcc.org.
The Lord has gifts of forgiveness, life, and salvation. These gifts can be received every week at both Grace Lutheran Church and Trinity Lutheran Church in Wichita, Kansas. Join us for divine services at Grace on Sundays at 8 a.m. and 4:30 p.m., as well as every Wednesday at 11 a.m., or at Trinity every Sunday at 11 a.m. Grace is located at 3310 East Pawnee and Trinity at 611 South Erie. Gather with us around our Lord and His giving His gifts to us. See you soon.